to 2 Kings, the 4th chapter. This seminar or workshop has been entitled The Two Women of 2 Kings, but it should be more correctly entitled Two of the King's Women. And in particular, this seminar is about you. We're going to talk about you. What I'm going to ask you to do is to participate with me in a rather personal way. And if you have a pencil, I'm going to ask you, I want you to write down whatever it is that is the deepest need of your heart. I'm not going to ask you to share this with anyone. In fact, some of you will write it down and immediately scratch it out. Some of you may want to keep it for a little while in your Bible. Some of you may write it down now and not look at it again. But I'm going to ask you to take this time and write it down. What is it that is the deepest need of your life? Because what we're going to be talking about is how these two women got that need met, and looking at whether or not there's something in these passages for us. The two women of 2 Kings, you've probably studied them both at one time or another, but I suspect that you've never studied them together. I think it's no accident that the author of this book put these two together to be studied, one right behind the other. If this talk had another title, a subtitle, and I always subtitle everything, everything's got a subtitle, it would be called Take It to the Top. Let's look at the passages. We're going to study all 36 verses, from the first to the 36th verse. We'll start verses 1 through 22. The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elijah, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that he revered the Lord. But now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slave." Elijah replied to her, "How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" "Your servant has nothing at all," she said, "except a little oil." Elijah said, "Go around and ask all your neighbors for empty jars, and don't ask for just a few. Then go inside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it to one side." And she left him, and afterwards shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her, and she kept pouring. And when all the jars were filled, she said to her son, "Bring me another one." And he replied, "There's not a jar left." And then the oil stopped pouring. She went and told the man of God, and he said, "Go and sell the oil and pay your debts. You and your sons can live on what is left." And immediately, the author takes us to another woman. One day, Elijah went to Shunem, and a well-to-do, King James says a prominent, a well-to-do woman was there who urged him to stay for a meal. So whenever he came by, he stopped there to eat. And she said to her husband, "I know this man who often comes our way is a holy man of God. Let us make a small room on the roof and put it in a bed and a table and a chair and a lamp for him, and when he can stay there whenever he comes to us." One day when Elijah came by, he went up to his room and lay down there. And he said to his servant Gehazi, "Call the Shulamite." So he called her, and she stood before him. And Elijah said to him, "Tell her, you have gone to all this trouble for us. Now, what can we do for you? Can we speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?" And she replied, "I have a home among my own people." "What can be done for her?" Elijah asked. Gehazi said, "Well, she has no son, and her husband is old." Then Elijah said, "Call her." So he called her, and she stood in the doorway. "About this time next year," Elijah said, "you will hold a son in your arms." "No, my lord," she objected, "don't mislead your servant, O man of God." But the woman became pregnant, and the next year, about the same time, she gave birth to a son, just as Elijah had told her. And the child grew, and one day he went out to his father, who was with the reapers. My head," he said to his father. His father told a servant, "Carry him to his mother." After the servant had lifted him up and carried him to his mother, the boy sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door and went out. She called her husband and said, "Please send me one of the servants and a donkey so I can go to the man of God and quickly return. The end of the story in a few minutes. Let's look at these ladies. The first woman, a wife of the man of the company of prophets. Elijah had a prophet school, as it were, sort of a seminary 2,500 years ago. This is the wife of one of those men. She's an insider. She's of the household of faith. She's used to miracles. She is, as it were, the deacon's wife. She's part of the church. What about our Shulamite? Who's she? Well, she's an outsider. She's not of the company of faith. I want you to know this is not an affectation. You see, I can't read these words with these glasses off, and I can't see your faces with these glasses on. Okay? So I have no choice but to keep doing this. She's an outsider. She's not part of the company of faith. The second thing about this woman, she cries to Elijah, "My husband is dead. Now the creditors are coming to take his boys as servants." Well, she's a widow woman. What do we know about her husband? Well, he didn't plan very well, did he? He obviously didn't have a life insurance policy. He's not affluent. You know, there's two kinds of poor. There's poor when you don't have everything you need, and there's poor when you don't have everything you need and you owe everybody. Okay? This woman is the second kind of poor. And the creditors are coming. Her husband is not particularly a financial success, and she wasn't either. But what about our Shulamite? The Bible says she was well-to-do, prominent. Prominent. I like prominent better than well-to-do, and I'll tell you why. We don't know a lot about her, but we know that she had financial means. She had enough means that she could give. She not only gave meals and hospitality, this woman had so much left over of her surplus, she could prepare a room just for this occasional visitor and gave it to him. We know that she's a woman whose husband must have been well-to-do. We've already seen twice, and we're going to see later, she has servants. She tells them to come and go, and they do. She talked to her husband. Remember? She talked to her husband. She said, "I discern this is a man of God, and let's do thus and so." This is a woman who has her husband's ear. What a blessing, ladies, to have your husband's ear. This is a pretty wise man, because he's got a wise wife, and he listens to her. This woman has anything she wants of this world's goods. Now, this is a gospel according to Eileen. I see these two women in the marketplace. Not that they'd ever be in exactly the same place at the same time. But I get the picture of the wife of the woman of the company, and she knows all the ladies of the company of faith, and she's bartering in the marketplace for what she's going to buy and what she's not going to buy, and she's counting her pennies, and she's being careful. The Shulamite woman probably doesn't do her own shopping. She goes into the marketplace with a servant. She says, "You go over here and you bring me back." No, quarrel with him over the price. Just pay the man what he's asking. You know, these two ladies probably wouldn't have ever run into each other. They probably wouldn't have been friends. They couldn't be more different. It's not an accident that the Lord wants us to read about one and then read about the other. Let's look a little bit more. A little more. Both of them have a problem. An incredible problem. And both of them, it has to do with their sons. Now, what does a son mean to a woman of this generation? Well, with no sons, she had no way to make her way in the world. Her sons were even more important than they would be to you and I from an economic standpoint. And this woman, the woman of the company, she's about to lose her two sons to a creditor. Can you imagine anything more devastating than losing your children to slavery? You know, we can relate to that. We worry about losing our children to slavery. Slavery of drugs, slavery of alcohol, slavery of sexual misconduct, slavery of creditors, the slavery of being out of the will of God. Not a woman here that doesn't pray for their children, but we don't lose them to slavery. So we can understand this desperate situation that she's in. And the Shulamite, she didn't have a son. And didn't have one until a miracle provided it. And now she's got another problem. He's dead. Doesn't say he's in a bad way. It says he's dead. And she's about to lose her only son. And we don't have any idea how old this boy is. But we know he's old enough that he's out with his father. Probably in the neighborhood of 10, 12, 14 years old. A little more about the differences. Shulamite woman is obviously a woman of discernment. She's very bright. We see nothing about this widow of the company that makes us think that she's particularly educated, particularly bright, particularly discerning. Both women, in their particular problem, are desperate. If the Lord doesn't intervene, their situation is desperate. They are destitute. Yes, even the Shulamite, as far as their son is concerned. And they are in total despair. The Shulamite woman and the widow woman, the woman of the company, now do something exactly alike for all their differences. They're going to take their problem directly to the top. In our story, Elijah is a type of God the Father. And we are one of these two women. So they take it to him. Now let's look at the first woman, the widow woman. He says to her, she comes to him and says, my husband's dead, they're coming after the boys, and if you'll allow me to okey-ease this, and what are you going to do about it? This is your responsibility, Elijah. You've got to help me. This is your responsibility, God. You've got to help me. And what does Elijah tell her? Tell me what you have in your house. You know, we've heard today that the Lord's not going to ask anything of you, that he doesn't provide a way for you to do it. I'm going to go one step further than that. You've already got it. Whatever it is that you need to meet your need, you already have it. You know, if you have an ordinary circumstance, then God can use, and often does use, ordinary methods to solve it. You need to make a rent payment. You go to work and you make the money. That's an ordinary way that God helps us. But if you have an extraordinary problem, then sometimes God's going to have to use an extraordinary method to help you. And we call those sometimes miracles. These two ladies are about to receive miracles in private. In private. That we're reading about in public. What'd she have? This poor woman had nothing but a little bit of oil. That's it. We've covered it. That's her entire substance. She's got a little bit of oil. What do we know about the oil? We know it's not enough to pay the creditor, let alone to support her. We know the creditor's not going to take the oil. And so he tells her to do something with it. Go home, gather the jars, and shut the door. Shut the door. Same thing he told the Shulamite. Shut the door. And so there she is in the house. And they begin to pour the oil. You see anything about this that indicates that she questioned the instruction? Nothing there that indicates that she questioned anything about what our type of God told her to do. She just did it. She just did it. You know, you can't help but wonder in this story, what would have happened if there had been more jars? What would have happened if there had been more jars? It says it didn't stop until the jars were empty. You see, she had a need she couldn't meet. And she acted on the instruction willingly, righteously, and without argument. So did the Shulamite woman. We're going to see that in just a few minutes. Let's switch to our Shulamite woman just a minute. It says, remember what he said to her? He said, "What can I do for you?" And she said, "Listen, no thanks, but I don't think you understand exactly how this works. You see, you are the poor prophet that stays in my house, and this is my house, and I've really got everything I need, and I know you're a good man, and I'm doing this, but I'm doing it out of the generosity of my heart, and I don't really need anything." And I love her answer. She says, "Listen, it's okay. I dwell among my own people." This woman has prominence in her community and among her people. She's got a broken heart. She's got a broken heart. And without asking, she's given a request. "What's your need?" Have you ever had a need that was so deep, that you'd had so long, that it hurt so bad you couldn't even talk about it anymore? Maybe you've even quit praying about it. Maybe it's a lost son or daughter. Maybe it's a husband. Maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's financial. Maybe it's physical. You ever had that need that you can't even speak anymore? If for no other reason, because you figure everybody's tired of hearing about it. You've said it. You've prayed about it. You've done everything you know to do. It's obvious the answer must be no. And so you're working around it. God specializes in long-term needs. Deep needs. The kind you can't even speak anymore. And that's where this woman was. Remember what she said? He said, "This time next year you're going to have what it is you wanted for so long. You're going to have that baby." Her response is, "Don't tell me that unless you mean it. Because I can't stand it. I can't stand the hope. I can't stand the pain. Don't tell me that unless you mean it." And again, to use some Okie, sure enough, a year from now, she has this boy. Now, of course, there's a big break in the story until this young man is out with his father. And I love verse 20, verse 19. "And his father told the servant, 'Carry him to his mother.'" Carry him to his mother. Okay. Listen, does that sound like everybody's husband that you ever met? Okay. "He's sick. Take him home." We don't have anything about this man to indicate that he wasn't a good man. We know he listened to his wife. We know that his heart was turned toward her and his ear. You know, this is, again, the gospel according to Eileen. I don't think he knew how sick that boy was. Why not? Well, because this miracle was intended to be private. Even without the father. It's a personal miracle to this mother. We're going to see in a minute. "So take him home to mama." Can't you see her? Haven't you helped that sick baby? And then he died. Let's go a little further. "She shut the door and went out." I'll go back up to verse 20. "After the servant had lifted him up and carried him to his mother, the boy sat on her lap till noon, and then he died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door and went out. Then she called her husband and said, 'Please send me one of the servants and a donkey so I can go to the man of God quickly and return.'" This is a woman of faith. She's coming back. She's coming back. She's expectant as to what's going to happen. She's also very calm. I've met this lady. She's very collected in the midst of crisis. It's almost as if she knows something the rest of us don't. She knows her source. And she's going to take it right to the top. "Why go to him today?" he asked. "It's not the new moon or the Sabbath." "It's all right," she said. "It's all right." Her son's dead. She's told no one. And her response is, "It's all right." When I discovered this passage changed my life. I have a very good friend. My lawyer and he's a lawyer and my personal lawyer. We've had an occasion to try a lot of cases, both together and opposite each other. And he's a Christian. It doesn't matter what happened in the turn of events. It didn't matter how devastating it was. It didn't matter how bad it looked. I'd always say, it's all right. It's all right. It's okay. I'm saying that one day, and he said, you're making me crazy. It's not all right, Eileen. We're in a lot of trouble with this thing. So I had an opportunity to talk to him about 2 Kings. See, it doesn't matter what it is. If you know who's in control, it's all right. It's all right. She saddled the donkey and said to the servant, "Leave on, lead on, don't slow down for me unless I tell you." So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. And when he saw her in the distance, the man of God said to his servant Gehazi, "Look, there's the Shulamite. Run to meet her and ask her, 'Are you all right? Is your husband all right? Is the child all right?'" And she said, "Everything is all right. Everything is all right." When she reached the man of God, she took hold of his feet. Gehazi came over to push her away, but the man of God said, "Leave her alone. She's in bitter distress, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me why." You know, we could learn so much from this woman. In the midst of her deepest personal need, she didn't stop and say, "You know, I really got to call the pastor. I think I need to get a hold of the prayer chain. Well, I better get a hold of my Sunday school teacher. And, I really ought to call Mama. I need to tell my husband." She's not wasting her breath on anybody who can't solve her problem. This woman is going straight to the top. She's going to the man of God. Funny. Isn't that what the widow did? She didn't call a company. She went straight to the top. The man who could solve her problem. They went straight to the Father. And notice what she did when she got there. She's not going to deal with the second in command. If you ever had any doubt about the priesthood of the believer, 2 Kings chapter 4 puts an end to it. Ladies, Christians are the biggest egotists in the world. We are. We are absolutely the biggest egotists in the entire world because we are a group of people who believe that the God who created the universe knows my name and is interested in my problems and is able to meet my need. That's incredible. Notice what she did when she finally got to him. She took hold of his feet. Ladies, this is scriptural. She took hold of his feet. Remember the woman with the issue of blood? What'd she do? She took hold of him. Remember Jacob's ladder? What'd he do? He took hold of him. What's that need you've got? Once you take it to the Father, then you need to take hold. Take hold and hang on. How long? I don't know how long. I don't know how long. My father tells a story. 17-year-old widow woman's son joined the Marine Corps. Never been any place but Oklahoma and Kansas. He landed in Long Beach, California, where he saw the Pacific Ocean. He said right there on the sand, he just dropped to his knees and said, "God, you got to let me show this to my mama. You got to let me show this to mama." 20 years later, he took his mama to see the Pacific Ocean. God even cares about those kind of things. He cares about all those kinds of things. You're going to have to take hold. And look at her response. "Did I ask you for a son? Didn't I tell you don't raise my hopes?" Remember what the widow woman said? What are you going to do about it? The message here, ladies, God can take it. You can tell him exactly how it is. You can tell him exactly how you feel, and he can take it. Your husband may get tired of it. Your mother may get tired of it. Your pastor may even want to change his phone number. God the Father can take it. He can take it. You can tell him exactly what it is, as many times as you need to tell him, whether it's once or 20 years worth. Of course, that's all she had to say. Elijah said to Gehazi, "Tuck up your coat into your belt, take my staff in your hand and run. And if anyone meets you, don't greet him. If anyone greets you, do not answer and lay my staff on the boy's face." But the child's mother said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." I don't care how long it takes to meet that need, ladies. Once you took hold of the Lord, you got to just hang on. He's not going to leave you. Don't you leave him. So he got up and followed her. Gehazi went ahead and laid the staff on the boy's face, and there was no sound or no response. It's almost like he wants us to be sure we remember he's dead. I read it just a few verses ago, but this is just in case we forgot. He's dead. So Gehazi went back to meet Elijah and told him the boy is not awakened. And when Elijah reached the house, there was the boy lying dead on the couch. He went in and he shut the door. And the two of them prayed to the Lord. Then he got on the bed and lay upon the boy mouth to mouth, eyes to eyes, hand to hand, and he stretched himself out on him, and the boy grew warm. And Elijah turned away and walked back and forth, and then he got on the bed and stretched him out once more, and the boy sneezed 7 times and opened his eyes. And Elijah summoned Gehazi and said, call the Shulamite, and he did. And when she came, he said, take your son. She came in and fell at his feet and bowed to the ground. And then she took her son and walked out. Both of these women had a devastating need that they could not meet. They couldn't meet it by being of the household of faith. They couldn't meet it by who they knew. They couldn't meet it with money. They couldn't meet it with position. They couldn't meet it with standing in the community. They couldn't meet it with intellect. Devastating needs. And they were totally in despair. Specifically, these two women needed to save their sons. You know, one woman saved, had 2 sons saved, and the other one had 1 son saved twice. They both had a need that only God could meet. And if God didn't intervene, it wouldn't happen. Both of them acted on faith. And you know, interestingly enough, it was faith based on experience. The woman of the company, no doubt in my mind, she'd seen a lot of miracles. She knew it was possible. And the Shulamite woman? Now, we don't know how she knew he was a man of God, but she'd seen something too. Faith based on some experience. And faith that was not shaken by circumstances. Faith that was not shaken by their circumstances. Both of them went straight to the top. They didn't run it past the deacon's committee. They went straight Father. We have a need, ladies. We need to take it straight to the top. It's God who can meet our need. Both of them received some instruction, and they did it willingly, righteously, and without argument. You know, when I look at particularly the Shulamite woman, I think of how many times I've had a need, and the Lord has given me a little piece of the answer, and I've said, that's it, God, that's all I need. I can take it from here. No, just get out of my way. I can handle it. Okay? Can't wonder, you know, can't help but wonder how many blessings I've missed because I decided I could take it from here. Or he showed me a little bit of the answer and I've said, that's great, but God, what if we did this too? Okay, how about if we do this too? This will work really, if that'll work, this will work twice as well. We do the inverse sometimes. We say, oh, wait a minute, God, I don't want to go that far. How about if I just do this much? How about if I just get 1 jar? How much do you get? 1 jar's worth. Both of them acted on their instruction. When they received the word, they acted on their faith. They didn't have to know a lot, ladies. They just had to know whatever it was the Lord told them to do, and they did it. They didn't have to know a lot. But they acted on it. And for both of them, their needs were met completely. Completely. Maybe not exactly the way they thought it was going to be met. You know, when I read about the Shulamite woman, I'm not sure she had any idea what he was going to do, but she knew he could do something. Anybody that can give you your son can deliver your son. And their deliverance was private. It happened behind closed doors. You know, God's not interested in circus acts, but he is interested in us. And yet here it is recorded that we're all looking at it today. Isn't it kind of neat? We don't even know a name for either one of these women. We don't even know their name, but the miracle that they experienced is recorded here for us. We want to have our needs met. We need to do a few things. We need to have the faith to take it to the top, to act on what the Lord directs us to do, and the assurance that He can use what you've got to meet your need. Remember what He said to Moses? When Moses said, "I can't go do that," He said, "Moses, what have you got in your hand?" And Moses said, "I haven't got anything but this staff here. This means a lot to me. It used to not mean very much, but now that I have to have this stick to walk with all the time, this means a whole lot to me. Didn't have anything but this stick." God said, "You know, funny thing, Moses, all I need is you and that stick. That's it. That's all I need. That's all I need. Whatever you have is all you need for God to meet the need in your life." Doing what I do, I have occasion pretty regularly to talk to children as part of custody or abuse proceedings. And frequently, I ask children in custody proceedings to tell me who their best friend is. You can learn a lot sometimes with that one little question. Some children will tell you mama, and some will tell you daddy, and some will say their big brother or sister, and for some it'll be an aunt or a grandmother or a grandpa, and sometimes maybe it's a friend down the street or little Johnny or little Judy or whoever it is, but it does give you an idea sometimes who they're close to and who they're bonded to. Sometime back, I had occasion to ask that to a little girl. We'll call her Sarah. Sarah had a particularly rough life. She'd been in and out of a number of foster placements, and her parents were in at least three states. There'd been DHS proceedings. And for all the world, it looked as though the parents would get the child back and then promptly leave the state, and they'd start all over again in some other state. And so here they were in front of me. Sarah's 11. And as I talked to Sarah, I asked her my question. I said, "Sarah, who do you talk to when you have a problem?" Sarah began to cry. But she never hesitated, and she didn't think about the answer. She said, "I talk to God, Judge. He's all I have." Me too, Sarah.